This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The White House announced yesterday that it would roll back federal guidelines that would help protect transgender students from discrimination at their schools. Specifically, the guidelines had encouraged schools to allow transgender boys and girls to use the bathrooms and locker rooms that corresponded to their gender identity.
These suggestions to schools were put into place during the Obama administration and have been met with pushback from those opposed to the measures.
Sawyer Johnson is Transgender Justice Program Coordinator for GSAFE Wisconsin, which advocates for LGBT students in schools around the state. Sawyer, thanks for joining us.
Of course, yeah. Thanks for having me.
So what exactly changed with this new announcement from the White House?
You know, so there's a big uproar about it, and the fact of the matter is that nothing has really changed. So what the Obama administration had released was a guidance surrounding how transgender and gender nonconforming students' rights and access to bathrooms fell under Title IX and fell under non-discrimination, but nothing has really changed. Like, we still have a lot of school districts and educators doing good work protecting transgender student rights, but the only thing now is that the federal government has said pretty clearly that we don't support transgender students.
Right. As I understand it, the policy from President Obama over the last year or so has been to say we will enforce these Title IX protections and schools risk losing federal money if they don't follow them. That is part of what changed with this new announcement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's correct. And then we still have school districts who are offering protections for transgender students. So I think a lot of what we're seeing from our transgender youth is really deep-rooted fear that, like, suddenly they're losing the support that they've had. And the reality of it is, at least in Wisconsin, that 50% of our students live in districts where they have protections.
Right. I wanted to ask about the situation in Wisconsin now. In a school that has already made a policy, that doesn't change.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's correct. Yep, so this doesn't influence local policy or school district policy whatsoever. Schools and educators still have the freedom to be supporting students as they've always been doing and to be creatively finding solutions to work with transgender and gender nonconforming students. It just means that at a federal level, we don't have the support we had during the Obama administration.
And I understand there are a couple of court cases out there elsewhere in the country and here in Wisconsin. What are you watching for from the courts that might influence this issue?
So one of the key cases we're keeping an eye on right now is Gavin Grimm. And Gavin Grimm is a transgender boy who we're seeing his case go to the Supreme Court to decide whether or not he can have protections to use the bathroom that aligns with his gender and honestly offers him the most sense of dignity and safety in his school.
Now, all of this comes from Title IX protections against discrimination. Now, one of the arguments against using Title IX I've heard is that it, as I understand it, specifies gender. People arguing against applying that to transgender students in this case say that gender means men and women. It does not apply to the transgender mm-hmm. category, they would say. What do you say
mm-hmm.
to that?
I would tell those people that we understand transgender to be more of an adjective and more of a descriptor for people whose experiences do align with women and men and other genders. And I think there's plenty of pre-existing cases that have used Title IX to say, nope, this offers protections for transgender students too, not least of which the Obama administration offering this guidance prior to its removal from President Trump.
We're talking to Sawyer Johnson from the group GSAFE, looking at transgender protections in schools after a new announcement from the Trump administration. Sawyer, can you talk about how, on a day-to-day level, schools in Wisconsin that have addressed this issue with policies, what are they doing on a practical level?
Yeah, so this is something that we like to really applaud educators and administrators for doing because, like, down to the nitty-gritty of what it looks like putting up shower curtains in a locker room or something like that, like, educators and administrators are doing what they know how to do best. And like I said earlier, over 50% of our Wisconsin students live in school districts that offer non-discrimination policies. For example, the La Crosse School District or the Madison School District. Those are areas where there are policies in place stating that we do not discriminate against transgender and gender non-conforming students. So on a regular day-to-day basis, that looks like our trans students having access to bathrooms and locker rooms that align with their gender and that offer them the greatest dignity and safety. Or that looks like things like teachers using their names, their real names, and pronouns.
We've seen efforts toward legislation. It looks like that's going to be reintroduced to require students in Wisconsin schools to use facilities, restrooms, locker rooms that match their gender identity as reflected on their birth certificate. What do you think of that?
I think that's something we're definitely going to see, and it's possible that we'll see it expanded even beyond school districts and beyond schools. And I think this is a really frightening, scary thing, especially for the transgender youth that I work with. And it really represents, I keep saying that word dignity, and it represents a lack of dignity and understanding of these students. I think there's a lot of fear and confusion out there about what it means. And school districts are already on a day-to-day basis dealing with it. From the Obama administration and from, like, local groups such as us, GSAFE, and like, school district policy, they already have guidance and support around what it means to support transgender students in schools. We just need to be having more conversations about what that looks like rather than making this sweeping generalization.
We've talked to lawmakers who have supported this legislation in the past. One of the cases they make is it's not even so much about the transgender students themselves or worries over them as the idea of somebody taking advantage of transgender accessibility to restrooms to act in a predatory way. A male mm-hmm. student, say, or an adult male at a public facility claiming to be transgender, whether they are or not, to gain mm-hmm. access to a woman's facility.
Yeah, and I would say that's a red herring, and I'd say it's disconnected from the daily reality of how we're working with and advocating for transgender students in schools. Right now, school districts and administrators are aware of which students are transgender, and they're working with them to make accommodations. There's really no way that somebody could claim to be transgender and then use certain facilities to gain access. School districts are already working to their best ability to protect students. That's something that they already do well.
Now, you've mentioned that about half of Wisconsin students are in districts that have addressed this issue, have set policy. What about the rest of them? What are we seeing in schools that haven't tackled policy on transgender facility access?
I think we're seeing a high degree of vulnerability for transgender students. We know that in Wisconsin, back in 2007, something like 25% of transgender students had attempted suicide. So we're seeing higher rates of mental illness, higher rates of depression, and that makes perfect sense because when we're not allowed to be our authentic, true selves, like, that has a real harsh impact on who we are, especially for our young people who are 13, 14, 15. And we're seeing, I think, that educators, like, really need that guidance, and that's something we offer in being able to pass these, like, different district-specific guidance.
Have you worked with students in Wisconsin schools who have been there for kind of before a school sets a policy and after, and can you talk about what kind of difference that's made for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think on some level, like, it represents something symbolic, and that's part of what this Obama administration guidance had represented. It represents symbolically that these are leaders and adults in their lives who understand their struggle and are supportive of who they are. But beyond that, it means that there's clear guidance on who they're going to and who they're talking about their transgender status with, and who can offer them support and help.
For transgender students who might be listening, or their families, or their teachers for that matter, what would you want them to hear now after this decision from the federal government?
I think for students specifically, I want them to know that there are still people, and many, many educators and administrators and people like me, who see their inherent worth and dignity and see them as beautiful beings. And for educators or community members or administrators who are supportive, I want them to know that, like, also as a youth worker, it's our time now to work to protect those students and do what we can. So we at GSAFE offer a lot of different resources for that. Like, we have a day of learning where we do a day of learning in the community, and they can, like, learn how to support transgender students. Or this is honestly a time to support the work that GSAFE does on a day-to-day basis, doing trainings across Wisconsin, teaching people how to work with LGBTQ students.
And yeah, for those teachers, what would be, or administrators, or concerned parents for that matter, in a school district, what's your message to them about the importance of this?
I think we all are people who already value our students and value our students' worth and value having environments where all students can thrive in schools. So I think let's continue doing the good work we do and that we know how to do, and make sure that transgender students also thrive in Wisconsin schools.
We'll leave it there for now. Sawyer, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Sawyer Johnson is the Transgender Justice Program Coordinator for the group G-Safe. We've been talking about the Trump administration's decision to roll back the federal transgender student protection guidelines. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Well, sure, we got a respite from the clutches of winter for a little while, but it's probably still going to be a bit until we get to spring. One thing to help us get there? Music.
WPR's Stephanie Elkins is with us now to share some new music to check out, mostly, by the way, music from Wisconsin. Stephanie is a longtime music host here at Wisconsin Public Radio. She's worked on the folk music side of things. Now you can hear her weekdays with classical music. Stephanie, welcome back.
It's great to be here. Always great to share music.
And is music part of your winter survival bag of tricks?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. It makes me feel great. It lifts me up. It gives me energy. Yeah.
And Stephanie, what are we listening to now? I get caught up in this music. It's beautiful. What is this?
This is called Backcountry Ramble, and it's by a Wisconsin ensemble. They're called Grammony, and they were founded by a UW professor and mandolinist named Michael Bell. And it also includes Chris Wagner and Mary Gaines and Sean Cialli and Chris Powers. And they play everything from bluegrass to classical, and they play like a classical ensemble. They're really fantastic. And it's from a CD called Dance of the Plants. And so it's got a lot of sort of plant-based names and wonderful, wonderful tunes.
So wait, they play bluegrass, but they play it like a classical music ensemble. How does that work?
Well, they're just really precise and well-rehearsed. Not that bluegrass isn't either, but they are trained, all of them, as classical musicians. Sean Cialli teaches kids music, fiddle. He teaches fiddle. And Chris and Mary and Chris Powers all teach. And so they're really great musicians, and they approach it in a classical way.
Huh.
Yeah.
So other plant stuff in there, huh? Is there any reason for that, the plant thing going on?
Well, I think they started out of a project called Loving of the Land a few years ago. The founder is a UW professor, and he runs the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, and they had this fundraiser that was going to benefit the center. And it was all based around sustainable agricultural practices and that kind of thing. So they did this music that was to benefit these processes and all of these groups, and so the music was composed and a lot of it written about plants.
Yeah. Botanical music.
Yeah, nice. And he lives up near Baraboo, and so there was a lot of music about prairie and a lot of music about sustainable agriculture, and it grew, and they did so well together that they've done more recording projects since then.
We should probably have them on the show. I want to move on to some of our, we've got a lot of tracks to get through, so let's check out another one. This one is Josh Hardy. The track is called Shiver in the Dark. Here's a listen.
Running from the cold, never really sure of a safer place to go.
All right, Shivering in the Dark. Well, we haven't been doing that the last few days in Wisconsin because it's been so warm, but we do spend some time doing that. Talk about Josh Hardy a little bit.
Well, he was born in North Dakota. His dad was a small-town police chief and a preacher, and so he grew up singing gospel and that kind of stuff. But he's based in Madison, and he's really a hardworking songwriter, and he travels all over the place. He has been writing and writing and writing, and his craft has just gotten better and better. Some of his songs are really dark. Some of his lyrics are really dark, and it's not always the kind of lyrics that I listen to, but they're powerful lyrics, and this one I really was drawn to. It was about searching and shivering and holding on, or maybe just giving up and the sand running out. I mean, it's really, the lyrics are particularly evocative, and the chord progressions, I thought, went really well with the lyrics.
And so, Stephanie, it sounds like you have been tracking some of these artists for a while. You mentioned the first band we listened to and Josh Hardy as well, this song here, Shiver. What is it like to follow these careers as probably a fan but a professional too and see them evolve?
You know, we're going to listen to a songwriter named Katie Dahl in a minute. And she came in. She was one of the first people I ever interviewed on Simply Folk. And I have watched her grow into the most magnificent songwriter. And it's wonderful to see them You know, if you approach songwriting as a craft, where you really, you think of it as the Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hour rule, where if you really, really play and work at it, it gets better and better. And you see the poetry come out, you see the musicianship come out, and you see the marriage of the song and the lyrics, and then the production quality gets better and better. And as they gig more, wow, it just gets amazing. And we have a lot of really talented musicians in Wisconsin.
That's one of the hardest things to do. You hear this from stand-up comedians, too. The work that goes into making something look spontaneous and natural, it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And you have it's a grind, and you hear it from musicians and comedians and anybody else that performs. And these songwriters are, a lot of them, in the case of Josh Hardy, he tours nationally. He goes internationally. And it's, you know, club after club after club, and it's hard. It's a hard way to make a living.
Now, you mentioned Katie Dahl, so let's take a listen there. This is a singer-songwriter who comes from, or lives in at least, Door County. And I like this one a lot. You really get that sense of place. And also, it's nuanced. How living in a small town can be great, but it can also be kind of tough. Here's a listen.
Living in this little town, most times it suits me fine. I got my radio, I got my rhymes. His big bed and this little town, they've suited me just fine. I get to feeling lonesome in my mind from time to time.
So it's neat to me. I go to Door County kind of a lot, actually, once or twice a year, and it's neat to me to think about the music growing up out of the place. And I get the sense you hear that not just in this song, but in lots of Katie Dahl's work.
Oh, she has a song called Goats on the Roof about, you know.
I know what that's about.
And this one is the newest CD that she's released, and it's got a song called Lombardy Avenue, and it talks about how Green Bay comes alive in the winter, that it's, you know, people get kind of tired and cold, and it's, you know, you have to go to the farm in Fleet and buy a new warm coat, but everything turns green and gold, and it sort of comes alive because of the Packers. But the way she writes it, it's so, it just makes you feel good. Yeah, it's really evocative. She makes Wisconsin, and particularly Door County, come alive musically. Yeah.
And then you've got a more classical piece for us, a violin concerto. Tell us about this one.
Right. This is the only non-Wisconsin piece in the bunch. It's an interesting story. It just came in really about 2 weeks ago. And the composer is Johann Halvorsen. He was born in the 19th century. And he wrote a violin concerto. And it was premiered in 1909 or so by a young Canadian violinist. She was only 19 at the time. And when he retired in the 1920s, he burned some of his manuscripts, and this was one of them. He just burned it. And we thought it was lost. Everybody thought it was lost to history. And then it turned out she had contributed her music and her archives to the University of Toronto, and it just surfaced in 2015. And it was given to the Norwegian violinist Henning Kragerud, and he made this world premiere recording. He was just in Madison last November to perform, and he's a really wonderful guy. So, And he includes some of this Norwegian, you can hear the Norwegian folk music almost in this, and so it's a really cool piece.
That's right. I mean, as you said, it's not from Wisconsin, but it does have those Norwegian roots, and there are certainly some very Norwegian towns here in Wisconsin. So to your ear, you can hear that, the Norwegian strands in it, huh?
Yeah, the composer played the hardanger fiddle and was influenced by folk music, and you hear that in the music.
Well, thank you for that one. That's a great one. And we'll listen to another song now. And this one gets at issues of, loneliness. And we've been hearing about that. Something in winter gets to us sometimes. I guess we could just be honest about it, and we can write about it in music. A song about waking up early. So Stephanie, intro this one for us.
This one is by an ensemble called Yada, Synths, and Orfield. And they're in the Chippewa Valley, and they are all longtime musicians who came together fairly recently. And the sax player just brings some wonderful music, wonderful musicianship to all of the songs. But this one I particularly liked. They've adapted lyrics from a poem by Adrienne Rich. And she's a feminist poet, a political poet. She's no longer with us, but it's about, if I'm lonely, it must be the loneliness of waking up first. I just love that lyric.
Here's a listen to that track, Waking First.
breath on the city. If I'm lonely, it must be the loneliness of waking first, of being the one awake in a house wrapped in sleep.
And is this a group that tours around a lot?
No, not really. It looks like the next time they're going to be appearing is in Eau Claire in April. But they are firmly in the upper Midwest, Chippewa Valley area. And they each have their own groups, too. So that makes it a little more difficult, I think.
That's the song, Waking First. And we're going to go out with the last one from another Wisconsin musician here. This one is from Peter Mulvey. He's another Wisconsin musician who seems to tour a lot. I guess I wasn't aware that there were so many hard touring musicians in Wisconsin. It sounds like there are.
And he in particular is really popular, and he's gained a national following. This is a song called Kids in the Square.
If you got a pretty good idea of what you're looking for, then you got a pretty good idea of what you'll find. Don't have to go so very far these days to find yourself a made-up mind.
So Peter Mulvey there. Stephanie, any releases you're looking forward to in the coming year?
You know, it's like Christmas for us around here. Every week we get 15 or 20 CDs into the library. That would be mostly folk and some of the classical as well. It's wonderful. We're really lucky.
Stephanie, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming by and sharing this music with us today.
Thanks, and thanks to the listeners for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Music, entertainment, talk, all of it. We're really grateful.
We definitely are. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for coming by. And thank you for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Stephanie Elkins, they're a longtime music host at Wisconsin Public Radio. You can hear her now hosting classical music.